Good afternoon and welcome to Weekly Sedition, the show dedicated to dissent and alternative viewpoints. This is Contra, your host this and every other Wednesday at noon, right here on 97.3 WRIR. It's Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. For those of you who don't know this, I'm a volunteer at the Flying Brick Library, a radical lending library located at 506 South Pine Street in Oregon Hill. The Flying Brick regularly hosts events, film screenings, potlucks, readings, and just this past Monday, it hosted a roundtable discussion on guns in the progressive and radical communities. I have to say it was pretty awesome. The discussion started with the commitment to keep calm, civil, and rational. Even though the topic of guns and concealed carry can be one that evokes strong emotional responses, that commitment was kept by everyone there, and I think we all walked away understanding each other's point of view better. I especially want to thank Colin Goddard, the Virginia Tech student, who was shot 4 times during the worst massacre in the country's history, not including massacres by the state, of course. He and his family came out to share about their efforts to work against what is often called the gun show loophole, and their time and input was appreciated a great deal. They seemed to appreciate the forum also, which they told us was actually more civil and rational than most of the events that they attend on the topic. We discussed several aspects of gun rights, use, and ownership at the Flying Brick, and the last one we talked about was concealed carry. That portion of the discussion began with the open question, what if a student at Virginia Tech had been legally carrying a concealed weapon that day? Since I was helping to moderate the debate, I tried to limit my own comments, even though I have strong feelings about the issue myself and I conceal carry myself all the time. However, this is kind of my radio show, so today it will serve as a platform for my own viewpoint, which I will still be allowing someone else to detail. The Virginia Civil Defense League is a group that advocates for the rights of citizens to be able to carry and defend themselves and others with firearms in the terrible case that one would actually need to. Its president, Philip Van Cleve, is a central figure in the national gun debate, having appeared on more news programs than I could possibly list here, and successfully working on related legislation. Last year, Philip Van Cleve was invited to speak at Virginia Tech by their chapter of Students for Conceal Carry, which is lobbying to allow students to be able to carry handguns concealed on campus. This is a polarizing idea, and for those of you who are utterly baffled by why this might be a good idea, I thought I'd let you hear what he had to say when he spoke at Virginia Tech to start a logical discourse in your own mind. I'll begin by noting the statistic that I brought up at the Flying Brick, which is that guns are used in the defense of self and home more than 2.5 million times every year, and in more than 90% of those cases, no one is even injured. The gun is merely brandished or a warning shot is fired, which is why they're not covered by the news and we only end up hearing about unfortunate deaths. About 80% of those defenses were with a concealable handgun. Starting there, I'm going to hand the show over to Van Cleve, an ex-deputy sheriff, who starts by explaining what has become a sort of mantra for the VCDL, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
It's not meant to be put down on police. It's just, again, I'm an ex-deputy sheriff. I can tell you it's reality. How rarely it was that I actually got to be at the scene of the crime to make a difference. If I did, it was because whatever was happening got dragged out. And it didn't happen right away. For whatever reason, it dragged out long enough for us to get there. Or once in a blue moon, you may have been driving by and spotted something with your eyes, but that person won the lottery whenever that happened. So, and I think those of you that went through the tragedy here a few years ago understood this. I mean, the police came up and the doors were chained. It was a long time before they actually got to go in, and everybody was on their own the whole time, and I'm sure that broke a lot of the policemen's hearts that they had to stand out there knowing that they were desperately needed inside. They couldn't get there. And remember this, and many of you may not even be aware of it. The police have no legal mandate to protect you. Right now, if you were to call the police and something horrible were happening, and the officer got another call and decided he was going to go on that first, and then you ended up getting grievously hurt or murdered, or the police messed it up and they sent him to the wrong house, They lost the message and it never got out. Whatever. They're not responsible. You can't sue them because they didn't show up and you got grievously hurt or you lost a family member. Nothing. The courts, the Supreme Court, has ruled multiple times. As far as the police are concerned, they are to protect the general public. That's it. So, lest you think I'm kidding, sometime if you're ever threatened, call the police and ask them to station an officer outside your front door to protect you because somebody just threatened you. And see what they tell you. I can tell you what they'll tell you, which is, sorry, you know, we can't do that. And they're not required to do that. But what we'll do is, when the guy shows up and he's kicking in your door, call us. And then we'll come out there and we'll take care of it. Of course, that might be too late. And it's not, again, any evil thing on their part. They just can't station a police officer outside the door of everybody that's having a problem with somebody else. At the end of the day, you're responsible to take care of yourself. Concealed handgun permit holders must be 21 years old or older and have a clean background and some training. And that basically has created a group of people that just don't commit crimes. It's so very, very rare. And there's 6 million permit holders. So on that rare occasion when you ever hear about a permit holder committing a crime, you have to figure that into 6 million. There are more permit holders than there are police officers. It's quite an asset. I'm surprised the government doesn't find some way to take advantage of it in an emergency. Concealed handgun permit holders have an almost zero violent crime rate, better than virtually any other group, including the police. We're very closely tied to the police. I think we actually outdo them a little bit. But it's very rare. And the interesting thing is, as you look at states, some of them have different standards. Some have very tight standards, some have very loose standards. The permit holders seem to be pretty much trusted everywhere they are, no matter what the standards they set. And we're seeing, you see more and more of this as time goes on. An interesting point, too, that the antis don't like to point out is statistically, concealed handgun permit holders cause less collateral damage than police when death comes calling. That is to say, it's extremely rare, if almost ever, that you hear of a permit holder having to defend himself and killing an innocent third party. Happens to the police far more. Now, keep in mind, their job is different. They actually go into harm's way, where as a permit holder, I try to stay out of harm's way. If somebody pulls a gun on me and threatens me, meanwhile I draw my gun and he runs, I'm not going to chase him. Not my job. I'm not a sworn officer. I didn't swear an oath that I will catch this person. I'm going to go the other way and call the police and let them take care of him. But I've saved my life. That was why I would carry a gun. But police are sworn to have to go chase the guy and get into whatever battle it takes to get him taken into custody. But needless to say, when they talk about collateral damage, they talk about, well, what about, there was crossfire and all that. That's really more of an anti-gun fantasy. Let's take a look about lies and the truth about guns and self-defense. Lie. If a person so much as bumps into a permit holder, he'll get shot. And we laugh, but they have done this every state that's tried to pass shall issue concealed carry or any kind of concealed carry. They have gotten that. With a straight face, the other side says, yeah, boy, these are dangerous people. Car accidents are going to turn into shootouts. And it never happens. In fact, they've had sheriffs, and they've had other people come back years later to say, you know what, I was wrong. It's been a perfect experience. We've had no problems. And it happens over and over. And I can tell you tomorrow, if we decide we're going to allow guns in somewhere else that we don't allow, they'll be right there again saying that the world is going to come to an end. It's not ended so far with all these permit holders. We have over 203,000 permit holders in Virginia. When I first got involved, what did we have back then? 30,000? That's how much it's gone up over the last 10, 12 years. It's been a huge increase. And have we seen crime suddenly happening all over from permit holders? No. More and more people are waking up and saying, you know what? I'm responsible for me. The bottom line is, first of all, if a crime happens to me, guess who's guaranteed to be there? Me, by definition. You know, I'm part of that equation, and I'm there. I can't get out of it. If I could, I would. You know, but you can't. You're stuck. If the crime's against you, you're going to be there. And people have realized that more and more, that they're responsible for their own safety. It doesn't make you a vigilante. A vigilante is somebody that goes out looking for criminals, to act like the police and arrest somebody. You're not behaving like that. What you're doing is self-defense. It's a very different thing. It's a reactive mode. You're not out actively looking for something. You're in a mode to save your life. Hopefully you'll never have to do that. But if you do and you don't have a gun, you will never have wanted something so much in your entire life. Why? If a permit holder had to pull his gun in an emergency, the police wouldn't know who is the bad guy and would shoot the permit holder. Police are not that stupid. It's easy to figure out who is who. The bad guy is the one who points the gun at the police when they tell him to drop the gun. That's if you do that, then I guess, you know, you are stupid. Either way, I take my chances with the police rather than dead at the hands of a murderer. I mean, what's to be gained by that? Oh, geez, I'm going to let him kill me because the police might shoot me. No, I'll take my chance at the police. Lie. If you just give the bad guy what he wants, he'll not hurt you. Well, we just, the alert that just went out, the VA alert, you know, we have a case, another case of that, where that's false. You had somebody in a 7-Eleven that did exactly what the bad guy wanted. Did everything he wanted. Didn't threaten him, didn't do anything, gave him what he wanted. The bad guy still shot him. And this happens much more than you realize. Actually, it's also an interesting statement. I remember when I was being interviewed by the Washington Post, the reporter, a woman was interviewing me, and I took a second or two to ask her a few questions. And I said, ma'am, I believe you told me that you're a mother, yes. And you've also mentioned that you give the criminal what he wants. Well, would you give the criminal your little girl if that's what he wants? I mean, is that part of your philosophy? And man, did her eyes light up. Oh, no, that wasn't part of her philosophy. She hadn't thought of it that way. She always thought, well, if a criminal comes after somebody, they'll be for me. They won't be after my little girl. She hadn't been reading the press very much. But that opened her eyes. It really did. And I said, well, besides that, that child is depending on you to protect her. What are you going to do to stop such a person? You wanted to. What are you going to do? Yell at him? Call him names? Throw shoes at him? What are you going to do? And, you know, she didn't have an answer for that. And you need to have an answer for that. The thing that I find interesting, and I've learned this in great detail recently, because one of our members, and also somebody that I knew before he became a member, is a psychologist for the state, and he has actually interviewed the worst of the worst. You know, you've heard about these people that have gone in and murdered families for no reason, just went in and slaughtered them. He's interviewed these people in jail. He got to ask them questions, but the one thing they learned about these people, and I totally can see this. I mean, as soon as he said it made perfect sense based on my own experience with some of the really bad people I ran into in San Antonio, was that they don't have empathy. Empathy is the ability to sympathize with somebody else. Empathy is where if you see somebody in pain, you feel pain. Or you can imagine that what you would be doing might cause pain. You don't want to do that, therefore you don't do it. The really bad criminals don't have empathy. They literally, it's like a part of their brain isn't wired to have it. That's why they can commit such horrendous crimes on innocent people, women, children, and everything else, murder them, and not feel anything. Go right after that and go get something to eat. They don't, where you and I would be throwing up if we had to kill somebody, even if it was in self-defense, and have nightmares. These people don't have any of this. And when you meet one, if you run into one, your only hope of survival with a sociopath is if you have a way to protect yourself. Pleading, begging, trying to get an empathetic response. Again, they don't have empathy. You're going for a response that they don't have. Why? I don't know. Does it matter? I guess it doesn't. You just need to understand what you're dealing with.
if you ever run into somebody like that. Did Cho seem real empathetic about the people that he was hurting? No. From every description I had, he was looking at them like pieces of meat. There was no empathy there. So that was your example of how true this statement is. This psychologist pointed out to me. When I had to arrest somebody in San Antonio that had just murdered a man that pulled over to help him in his car, and the bad guy just swung around and killed him with a shotgun. Just killed him. There was no conversation. There was nothing. The guy wasn't done. The guy mad. He pulled over to help him. He killed him, abducted his wife in the car, and we ended up catching him. And I can tell you, when you looked in this guy's eyes, there was no remorse for the horrible thing he had done, the lives he destroyed. Nothing. All he could do is look at me like I was a cockroach. Yes, it's rare. I have never been in a car accident where I needed a seatbelt. I had somebody once tap me on the rear. I've tapped a couple of immovable objects I shouldn't have tapped, but never needed a seatbelt. So from my experience, nobody needs a seatbelt because I've never had anything happen. So I guess it must not happen. But in reality, I know, yeah, it does. As we're standing here talking now, there's probably somebody dying or somebody grievously hurt in this state because the car's rolled over or had an accident with a drunk driver. So do we wear seatbelts? Yeah, we do. Because just in case we have that encounter, we want to make sure we get home. A gun in the hands of a law-abiding citizen is nothing more than an insurance policy. You pray to God you'll never need it, but if you need it, you got it. Now, this again is the concept, you know. People actually picture a sign like this working. This is a gun-free zone if you're planning on a shooting a bunch of innocent people. And then yourself, we're sorry, but that's just not allowed here. You know, you may say, well, but this is crazy. What you've got is something called projection. Projection is where you take your attributes, because you are the person you know best, and you project those on people around you. It's one reason, for example, the con men can work a very innocent, naive person so well, because that person is projecting on the con man their own values. And they're saying, well, he can't be lying about this, because that would be dishonest. I'm being honest with him. Why would anybody want to do anything bad to me? And indeed, they find out later that, yeah, there are plenty of people that would like to do bad things to you. It's got nothing to do with your own personality. And what happens with this sign is that people on the other side of this are projecting that, well, if they saw such a sign, they wouldn't want to violate the law, therefore they wouldn't carry. And they're projecting that on everybody. And that's a problem, because you can't do that. There are people out there that will kill you in a heartbeat and not care. Where you might not be able, there are probably people that may not be able to step on a cockroach. You know, they just don't want to kill anything. There's extremes, but you have to understand that this is projection. This is somebody that believes in this is saying, I would do this. But so what? You're not the problem. The person you're worried about, this means nothing. You might say, but you know, there are laws. You know, why does this mean nothing? Because when a criminal commits a crime, and I know this from dealing with plenty of them over the years, they do not expect to get caught. They don't care what the penalty is, because if you're not going to get caught, what's it matter what the penalty is? Death penalty? Well, whatever. I'm not going to get caught, so I'm going to do what I want. That's how they look at it. And if you look at life that way, and you see a sign like this, you can understand it means less than nothing. By the way, criminals, while they may not have, the violent ones may not have empathy, they do have one thing that they really understand. That's their own life. They'll do anything to protect their own life. They don't want to get hurt. They don't mind hurting you. But the empathy they understand is only within themselves, what affects them. And so they do understand force. That's why, as a deputy sheriff, I remember a little old lady, 80-something years old. I lived two doors away from her in San Antonio, and some guy came up, knocked on her door. She looked through the old, saw a guy with long hair, said, I don't want to answer this, sat down. Next thing she knew, her door was being kicked in. It was about to come off the hinges. She knew, with me two apartments over, there wasn't time to call me. There wasn't time to call 911 and go, hi, my name is Jane Smith. I live at this address. My door is getting kicked in. The operator's going to be going back and forth. They have to get all these questions from me. There wasn't time. She knew it. She ran to her closet, got a .22 rifle that I don't even know was loaded, belonged to her husband. She swung the curtain back by the picture window. There was a picture window by the door. Swung that back and aimed the gun at the guy. This guy took one look at that gun, and the little old lady, probably an unloaded gun, He didn't know. He wasn't about to find out. And he was running for his life to get away from her. Students would be killed in the crossfire between good guys and bad guys. Truth, Virginia Tech students were killed in large numbers because there was no crossfire. Nobody fought back. In the real world, crossfire is not an issue because we've learned that unarmed students drop to the floor and play dead until the shooting's over, offering no resistance whatsoever. But you know what? Again, let me put it to you real simply. If I was in a classroom and somebody was about to murder me as Cho was murdering people, and I had the option of crossfire, that there might actually be somebody shooting at this guy, I'll take it. You know? Yeah. Shoot at him. Take him out. I'll take my chances on getting hit by that because he's about to kill me in cold blood anyhow. What have I got to lose? I've got nothing to lose. The learning environment would be impaired if there were armed faculty and students. Since guns carried by faculty and students would be concealed, no one would know for sure if there were any guns at all in the room, out of sight, out of mind. They're not going to know. That's the whole point of all of this. In fact, the beauty of this concealed carry part is that since nobody knows, even those that aren't carrying have a sense of protection from those that are carrying. Because when the bad guy comes in, or if he's even thinking of doing it, he's going, I don't know who to attack. I don't know who's safe, who's the bad guy. I don't know what to do. And therefore, there may only be one person in the room that's carrying, or there may be nobody. But he doesn't know that, but he knows the opportunity for somebody to be carrying is there. And that changes everything for him. And it protects those that aren't even carrying. So there's a side benefit to it. Also, Cho committed suicide as soon as there was resistance. In this case, it was people with guns that proved that to be that resistance. The police, in this case. The police are nothing more than people with guns. And I can tell you this. You hear a lot, well, but the police have special training. Heck, I'm an ex-deputy sheriff. Yes, I had some training. But it was nothing. I don't know what people envision police having for training. Police have to do much more than carry guns. That's not what your job is mostly about. That gun on the policeman's side is for his self-defense. You got a whole array of things you've got to learn to be a police officer. Guns is just a tiny fraction of that. Basically, you go out and qualify on a range. As long as you can hit the target enough times, you're qualified. And sometimes you don't have to qualify again ever, and sometimes you qualify every year. It's up to the department. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is somebody with a gun showed up and Cho gave it up. How would it have changed if a student had been able to show resistance? Or if enough students had even charged Cho? If a bunch of them got together and said, we're going to die anyhow, let's charge him. Yeah, well, one of us may get shot or a couple of us, but let's go for it. We got nothing to lose and we can stop this guy and save lives. But look what happened near campus here. We had a woman that was at, one of your, I guess, coffee shop. And a guy, you know, people in the coffee shop. A guy comes in with a knife and proceeds to decapitate her. He wasn't even threatening anybody else, as best I know. But nobody did anything. They didn't throw chairs at him. A bunch of guys didn't get together and charge him to see if they could fight with him to save that woman's life. Well, I mean, it was horrible. The police, again, didn't get there in time, and nobody helped her. Again, it emphasizes a couple points. Number one, you are responsible for your own safety. At the end of the day, the only person that can truly save your life in most emergencies is going to be you. What about the Virginia teacher who blocked the door with his body so the students could escape through the window and was shot to death by Cho? What if that brave man, I mean, that guy was incredible, what if he'd had a gun and could have opened fire as soon as Cho stepped in that room? You might now still have a very brave teacher teaching here, a whole lot of students alive, and one other person that was going to be dead anyhow dead. It's a little quicker. What if he had been armed? The man had been through a lot. He had been through Germany back when they were killing Jews. He'd been through that era, only to die here in a free country because he was disarmed, much like the Jews, unfortunately, had been back then. Not all schools have bans. Utah has no bans. And we all hear about those horrible shootings in Utah all the time, don't we? No, nothing. Quiet. No problems in Utah. And they can carry in K through 12. 12 schools. You can carry in the fourth grade classroom if you want to as a teacher or as a visiting parent or a guest. Again, heard of all the shootings there? No. That would be a very bad place to pick to kill somebody. Very bad. We've had cases where basically the teacher had to run to his car to get a gun to stop the shooter before the police got there. That happened in Pearl, Mississippi. One of the assistant principals had to run to his car while a shooting was going on, got his gun, came back, and stopped the student that was killing others. Here at the Appalachian School of Law, a disgruntled student came in and started killing people. Everybody was disarmed. However, two students had guns in their cars, ran to the car, came back, and held the murderer at gunpoint until the police got there. And had they been vigilantes, they might have just summarily executed the guy. But permit holders don't do that. All this fear of permit holders that the other side tries to push out there, there's nothing to back it up.
That's all we've got time for today. You've been listening to Philip Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, and this has been Weekly Sedition, right here on 97.3 WRIR. It's Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned.